Alzheimer's is the only one of the nation's top 10 causes of death for which there's no effective treatment, let alone cure. Long before death, it robs its victims of their dignity, their humanity. Gone is their ability to recognize loved ones and to connect with their past. They lose their memories, their capacity for constructive thought, their ability to live independently. But there's hope. Stand by. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello and welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Barbara's life was affected by a neurological disease. Watch.
I grew up very active, very healthy, never had a headache, hardly ever got sick. One day realized that it seemed like from night to day someone had taken a magic marker and it just cut me in half. And this whole left side of my body was completely numb. It was like I was carrying around a carcass. And I thought it was so strange. I, tried to pinch myself and try to get some sort of a reaction. I even put my hand over the stove to get some heat, but there was no sensation at all. I began to notice when I was driving that my eyes were having a problem, that when I would look this way, it would seem like this eye was trying to gallop to get caught up with where the focus of my eyes were going. Driving became painful because of the eye strain. A lot of dizziness, a lot of weakness, and then this just untreatable fatigue. I would try and do as much as I could to stay healthy, to get energy, but I was not able to do that. I was just wanted to be in bed all of the time. So I went into the doctor, went to the internist, and walked in and told him, I said, I think I have multiple sclerosis. I said, I want you to tell me exactly, don't sugarcoat anything. And after he examined me, he said, you could be right. He says, it's either MS or it's a brain tumor. And I want you to go immediately to have an MRI. Walking down the hallway to get to the MRI, I had the most beautiful thought I've ever had in my life. And it was, God, thank you that you are not a stranger to me. And I was so thankful that throughout my life, I had invested in wanting to have a relationship with God. And so it wasn't this strange sort of a panicky sort of a situation, because I knew who he is and that he wasn't asleep. He knew exactly what was happening and I could trust him with what was going on. So went in, had the MRI. The day later, found out from the doctor that it was indeed MS, too many lesions to count. At that time also, at the onset of diagnosis, I had a migraine condition, a chronic migraine condition, severe chronic migraine condition. And again, never having had a headache before. And I was told, this is not a headache, this is something worse. And as time has gone on, it's never a headache, it's something more. I ended up becoming completely bedridden. Again, the fatigue was so paralyzing, it was like a lassitude sort of a fatigue, or even I would get so freezing in bed I didn't even have the energy to sit up and pull the covers up over me to get warm. The pain became so intense I wasn't able to speak. I couldn't smile. I couldn't even hug my children. And so it was a very challenging time for all of us. I had been through this bedridden period when this friend who was taking care of the children heard from a friend of hers who had said, have her look into the Swank diet.
Dr. Swank got remarkable results from putting MS patients on a low-fat diet and eliminating saturated fat. We'll hear the rest of Barbara's story on today's show. Learn about a new protocol for reversing early Alzheimer's disease, create a veggie dish in the kitchen, and analyze the dangers of one of our favorite pastimes. First up, though, the news. In the headlines today, reverse age-related decline, fracking's effect on the unborn child, and Alzheimer's prevention starts early. Regular exercise prevents the aging of muscle and immune function, according to a recent British study. The muscles of highly active male and female cyclists aged 55 to 79 showed very little age-related decline. When the cyclists were compared to inactive people their own age, it wasn't surprising that their muscles and immune systems were healthier. When compared with a group of inactive 20 to 36-year-olds, it appeared that in some respects the cyclists hadn't aged at all. They didn't lose muscle mass, their cholesterol levels were healthy, and they had less body fat. Typically, immune function begins to decline after age 20, but the cyclists hadn't lost any. Researchers noted they did not exercise because they were healthy. They were healthy because they'd been exercising most of their lives, and it's never too late to start. For mothers living within 1 kilometre of a fracking site, researchers found a 25% increase in the probability of a low birth weight baby weighing less than 5.5 pounds or 2,500 grams, and significant declines in average birth weight overall. Infant health is also affected, with higher rates of infant mortality, ADHD, and asthma, lower test scores, lower educational achievement, lower lifetime earnings, and higher rates of participating in social welfare programs. The source of pollution from fracking is still unclear. It could emanate from the air or from water, from chemicals on site, or from an increase in traffic. Important risk factors for Alzheimer's disease in young and middle-aged adults includes diet, weight, and intellectual stimulation. Researchers studied over 100 cognitively normal, healthy people aged 30 to 60. Brain cortex thickness was measured by MRI and compared to lifestyle, vascular risks, and cognitive testing. Key regions of the brain related to Alzheimer's were thicker in those who ate more of a Mediterranean-style diet and in those with normal insulin sensitivity. Intellectual enrichment was associated with better cognition, overweight with lower cognition. So it's never too early to stave off Alzheimer's with a healthy diet combined with physical activity to maintain a normal weight and insulin. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's Health News. Today's expert is a familiar guest on Go Healthy, nutritionist Dr. Wes Youngberg. He has certified for the Bredesen Protocol to restore memory to those with early Alzheimer's disease. I asked him how common Alzheimer's is.
Just in the United States alone, we have 5.4 million people already diagnosed with full-blown Alzheimer's disease. And worldwide, it's about 30 million. By 2050, it's going to be 160 million people worldwide with Alzheimer's. And in England and Wales, it's the number one cause of mortality. Number one cause of death. It just came up a few months ago.
Wow.
And in the U.S., it's number three, right after heart disease and cancer. So, soon to be number one, I suspect.
That's amazing that that's increased so quickly.
Yes.
And what's causing the increase?
There's a lot of factors. There's a lot of concerns about what's going on. And so that's why there has to be a programmatic, systematic, network-based approach to dealing with it, or else it's just going to keep exponentially increasing. So it's been really fun working with patients, helping them figure out what their individual triggers are.
So is there a genetic basis? There is, right?
Absolutely. Dr. Rudy Tanzi out of Harvard with the Department of Neurology there, his team has discovered about 80% of all the genes associated with Alzheimer's. And by far, the single most important gene related to late onset Alzheimer's is the APOE4 mutation, which is a gene that codes for an enzyme that breaks down cholesterol and fat. And if you can't do that very well, your risk of heart disease goes up. So if you have that mutation, your risk of heart disease goes up automatically. But it's also the gene that codes for the enzyme that breaks down beta amyloid plaque in the brain. And so if that's being produced for various reasons and becoming oxidized and forming plaque, your brain has to detoxify and get rid of it. If you can't do that very well, it builds up and forms these plaques and tangles.
So if we have the ApoE gene, are we doomed?
We now know that if you address the underlying triggers that activate the gene, that create the toxicity in the brain, that create infections in the brain, whatever inflammation of any kind that turns on the amyloid precursor genes to produce that inflammation that then drives what we call synaptoclastic. It actually eats up synapses instead of turning on the synaptoblastic, which is healing the synapses that represent our memories. So the key thing is that we need to be really focused on addressing the risk factors.
And we'll learn more about how our synapses are destroyed in the next segment. Now it's time to think about this.
Honey, I still don't feel well. I don't think I'm getting any better.
Oh, really? Are you exercising like your doctor recommended?
Well, yeah. You know, the batteries went out on my remote the other day, and I had to change the TV manually all night long.
That's not exercise. I bet your heart rate hardly went up.
Oh, well, you know those dramas I watch on television?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the exciting part, my heart races. That must be exercise.
Hardly. Your doctor said you need 150 minutes a week of aerobic activity.
Well, what's aerobic mean?
That means exercise or activity that puts your heart rate up. Depends on your age, but for you should be aiming for about 130.
Well, my heart races when I go up about 4 steps. Of course, I have to stop and rest and get my breath after that. Is that exercise?
Well, how long does your heart rate stay up there?
Oh, for about 10 seconds at least.
10 seconds? You need to maintain it for 10 minutes each time.
10 minutes? Wow. Well, maybe that's why I'm not getting better, because I'm not trying hard enough.
Well, that would be an understatement. Pathetic efforts, pathetic results. Our happiness depends on our health, so give your health the best. Doctor's orders.
It's kitchen time, and Justin has something special for us today. What are we doing today, Justin?
Today we're going to make sweet roasted Brussels sprouts.
There's nothing sweet about Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll prove you wrong today.
Okay, what goes in it?
Well, this is awesome. This is a recipe I came up with for Thanksgiving. You're not going to believe how tasty it is.
Okay.
1 pound of Brussels sprouts, 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 2 apples, and 1/3 cup of walnuts.
Wow.
Pretty easy.
That sounds easy. What do you want me to do?
So if you'll just start slicing these Brussels sprouts in half.
All right.
And I'm going to dice this apple here.
Hopefully we won't take any fingers off in the process.
Yes. Let's keep all of our fingers.
You know, I've heard that Brussels sprouts get better rather than bitter after the first frost of the year. So,
oh, is that true?
So don't buy your Brussels sprouts too early in the season because they get bitter.
That is a good tip.
Yeah. And you know, it's good to kind of chop these up ahead of eating them or ahead of cooking them.
Now I'm going to start...
Release all those good flavors and chemicals.
I'm going to just put a little dab of oil here and just going to saute these Brussels sprouts flat side down.
Oh, so don't do too many at once.
Yeah, you don't want to put too many in there.
Them.
And let me tell you a little secret about Brussels sprouts. Mm-hmm. The longer you cook them, the more bitter they get.
Is that right?
Yeah, so we want to not have super bitter Brussels sprouts, so we're just going to lightly saute them.
All right.
Just till they start seeing that that bright green.
Okay. I'll turn them up here so you can see them.
Perfect.
Amongst all the leaves.
We'll just throw all these in there.
Oh, and there's one I missed. The one that nearly got away. There we go. Oh, look at all that good stuff.
Yeah. These are like delicious little mini cabbages. So you just saute those till they just start turning bright green and just get a little bit of a crust on the bottom.
Okay.
And when you're...
So that's to give them that texture?
Just to give them some texture, yep.
Okay.
And without them getting too bitter. So then we're going to just combine our apples And
oh, you're like me. You just throw the whole lot in, the core and everything.
There. This is a super easy recipe. I'll roughly chop these walnuts real quick.
So there's some added nutrition there with those walnuts, a little bit of fat to make it satisfy the appetite.
And the walnuts with the apples just tastes...
Oh, I always love walnuts and apples
together. Tastes great. And the apples are there to balance the acidity, the slight bitterness from the Brussels sprouts. Okay. You put it all together, it's wonderful. So let's just dump these in there.
All right, I'll bring this over for you.
All right. Just toss that all together.
Oh, yeah. Look how they've just changed.
Yeah, they're already just starting to get a little golden. So we'll just bake that at 425 for about half an hour. And when it comes out, you've got this beautiful...
Oh, look at the colors. That's pretty with the red apples and the... Yeah.
New favorite?
That is nice. Yeah. That is a great way to do Brussels sprouts. Half an hour and it's done. Well, thanks, Justin.
Absolutely.
You want to try this if you've got too many apples and Brussels sprouts at the same time. Remember that all our recipes are on our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. Now back to Barbara, who was confined to bed with dizziness, weakness, overwhelming fatigue, and severe headaches due to multiple sclerosis. Then a friend of a friend recommended she try the swank diet. Watch what happened next.
So I ordered this book, and I decided I was going to fully commit myself to this diet, not knowing how I was ever going to do it. I had been brought up by a Southern grandmother, and bacon grease was in everything. I didn't know how I was ever going to not have hamburger anymore, steak, or any of these other things. And so it's just something I began to pray about all the time, asking God to change my tastes. And again, make me look at the focus. What was my goal? My goal was wellness. My goal was health. Therefore, this was secondary, what I really, let's say, wanted at the time. So honestly, it was a huge adjustment at first. It really was. I didn't want to hold my family back from enjoying their food. And so every Friday night, which was pizza night, you know, I wanted them to still have the pizza night. So I would have my own food and have them enjoy theirs. There would be years where I would be in bed with all kinds of fun and happy things going on in the kitchen, and I was just in bed. And that's when, again, my faith just became so important, and it centered me all the time, because even though the times when I was isolated and alone in my room and sometimes feeling forgotten, I mean, of course, you would have all those kinds of emotions of isolation. I always knew that I wasn't alone in my room, because God was with me. And again, he's the one that has centered me throughout this entire journey. And there have been so many wonderful things that I've learned that I wouldn't have learned if I hadn't had these disabilities or these setbacks, these challenges. And I really believe that God had led me to discovering this diet. So I got on it, and within about 4 or 5 months, I began to walk again. I'm fully active and mobile due to the swank diet.
Defying conventional wisdom. Just like Dr. Dale Bredesen, a neurologist who has developed a protocol for restoring memory in Alzheimer's patients, he's written this book, The End of Alzheimer's, the first program to prevent and reverse the cognitive decline of dementia. Today's guest, Dr. Wes Youngberg, has trained under Dr. Bredesen and is using the Bredesen protocol to do just that. I asked him if any drug medications play a role.
There's been over 200 major clinical trials with drugs, and essentially all of them have failed. The only drugs currently approved to treat Alzheimer's, you talk to any doctor who's prescribed them, and they will tell you flat out, they work for a little while to decrease the symptoms, but they do nothing in general to impact the course of disease and the progression of the disease. So there's really nothing out there from a pharmaceutical standpoint that is addressing the problem of Alzheimer's at all, and that's why it's considered to be an incurable disease conventionally. But from a lifestyle medicine perspective, we know better.
So that's where we have to go now. You mentioned inflammation in the brain, being a dietary What are the dietary sources of inflammation?
That's right. Just like in heart disease, the inflammation is really the main driver of atheroma production inside the intimal part of the artery. Well, likewise in the brain, if you have inflammation systemically, that literally turns on the genes that then promote problems in producing the beta amyloid in the brain. Now, what's really interesting is that beta amyloid is actually there as the main part of the immune system to protect the brain. So just simply getting rid of the beta amyloid isn't the answer. Vaccination studies in Europe have shown that they were able to eradicate all the beta amyloid from the brain, and then people started being at risk of death from meningitis because beta amyloid is the best antimicrobial that the brain can produce. So the brain was created to produce beta amyloid for a reason. So the goal isn't to get rid of that, but to address things upstream. Why does the brain produce it in the first place? What is actually causing the inflammation? And it's usually a dietary or a lifestyle or an environmental cause.
So let's start with the dietary piece. What food groups are pro-inflammatory?
Well, basically, anything that's not made by nature, that was not originally intended to be eaten by humans, those are pro-inflammatory. And so, one of the biggest problems is when we refine products down. So, the number one, in my opinion, in my experience, is sugary foods. Sugary foods are very inflammatory, in part because they create diabetes of the brain, which is essentially another way of referring to Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is now well known to be an insulin resistance of the brain, and so the brain develops this resistance, not allowing sugar to get into the blood to the neurons, and that requires more insulin. And so now this high insulin level has to be broken down by the enzymes in the brain, and that creates higher beta amyloid.
So sugar is one.
Stay away from sugar like it's the plague of plaque formation, which it is.
Give us one other food.
Well, the trans fats. You know, just artificial fats, artificial sweeteners. Anything artificial is really bad for the brain.
So those are the things that you said people weren't supposed to eat because they're artificial, they're not in nature. All right. What kind of dietary pattern might slow down Alzheimer's disease?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've always said what's good for the heart is good for the brain and vice versa. And so we've known for over 25 years after Dean Ornish's amazing research on reversing heart disease that same dietary pattern in general is going to be very effective in helping support neuronal function and what we call synaptoblastic, building up those memory synapses again, restoring healthy neurons again. So bottom line is plants, whole, unprocessed plant foods with an emphasis on green leafy vegetables, which are just loaded with micronutrients, some of which we don't even understand yet, that are very healing to the brain. The University of Chicago did a big study years ago showing that elderly people eat at least 2 cups of green leafy vegetables a day have the cognition of their peers 5 years younger.
So green leafy vegetables are the anti-aging medicine for the brain.
That's right. It's one of the big ones.
Wow. That's really interesting. Now, you're not just talking preventing. I heard you say restoring. So you're saying that Alzheimer's is reversible to a certain extent.
That's right. Those who are researching this are being careful to talk about early Alzheimer's being reversible. There's really 3 main stages of cognitive decline that we discussed. There's the subjective cognitive impairment, which is where we know we're not what we used to be. We know that we have issues with our memory a little bit. But when we take a test, a cognitive neuropsychological test, we ace it. Yeah, we're good at tests. But subjectively, you know, we have a problem. Or the mild cognitive impairment, where we start missing some of the answers on cognitive tests that we really should have gotten. And but those are people you wouldn't even notice a problem. It's just on the test. And then that progresses into dementia, of which Alzheimer's is the most common form. 80% of all dementia is Alzheimer's, followed by vascular dementia, which is much less, but the second most common. They all have a similar underpinning, which has to do with inflammation, trauma, atrophic factors, which means the hormones are out of balance. And the number one hormone that gets out of balance that throws the other ones off is insulin. So if you're constantly snacking and getting sugary foods to boost your mood and your cognition, ironically, the very thing that is boosting your mood and cognition is destroying ultimately that very same thing.
Bad for the brain on a number of levels. Now consider this.
The first part of the Bible tells us that Abraham was married to a very beautiful woman who happened to be his half-sister. Not unusual in those days, when fewer mutations were in our genes and healthy children could be born. But on at least two occasions, Abraham told people that she was his sister and hid the fact that she was his wife in case she was taken and he was killed. Bit of a lack in faith in God. Likewise, he doubted God's promise that he would have a son to Sarah, and so he had one to Hagar instead. Yet in Romans 4, it says that Abraham was strong in faith. Is this the same Abraham, or did God forget? Actually, several times in the Bible, God says he forgives our sins and remembers them no more. He doesn't say he forgives and forgets, because forget is a passive word, a word that might make us think that one day he'll suddenly remember. Instead, he promises to remember no more. It's very reassuring to know that our God has a perfect memory, yet when we confess our sins, he presses delete.
Welcome back. Sean's here and he's brought a chair. This is really exciting. Hi, Sean.
It's just a chair. How are you?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to sitting down.
No, we're not going to be sitting down.
Oh, we're not?
In this chair.
Uh-oh.
We sit down all the time. So why not use one of the tools that at our disposal all the time, right?
Yeah.
So the chair.
Great.
So let's get warmed up first.
Okay.
Okay? So we're going to be doing some upper body, some lower body, and then some upper body again using the chair. If you're in the office, it's here. You have to use it. You're limited for time. Use it. We're going to show you some ways to use it.
Great. Okay?
So the first one, we're just going to go into squats. Set your timer for about 30 seconds. And these are called speed squats. I call them air squats, speed squats, same thing, all right? What you wanna do is get down, pop up. You're intentionally moving fast. You can start off, you keep on going. Now, the beauty of squats is that you start off high, and then as you get more limber, you go a little bit lower. Put the weight in your heel, 3, 2, and 1. Do that, heart rate's up, you feel good. You kind of feel prepared to go into it, right?
Right.
So we have our chair. You're at work. You have about 15, 20 minutes to work out. First exercise, we're going to work the triceps, okay?
All right.
Go right into dips. Nope,
okay.
No sitting, I promise. There are two ways to do this. The first is have your knees bent. Number two is have your legs straight. The only downside of having your legs straight is that you may feel a little bit of tension on your knee. So just semi-bend it just a little bit right there, and then you can go into your dips, all right? Set your timer for about 30 seconds. Go all the way up. Now, the goal here is to not rush. Do not rush the tricep dips. These are great exercises to work those arms, firm it up, keep it nice and tight. You know those hello goodbyes?
Yeah.
Right, get rid of those hello goodbyes. 3, 2, and 1. Perfect, you could have a seat. I call them hello goodbyes because someone says, this always says hello, goodbye.
All at the same time.
All at the same time. All right, so we're going to stand up. No sitting at the job.
All right.
All right, we're going to do a isolated lunge, single leg lunge. We're going to point the toe in the chair. Keep the chest pointed up. All right. Make sure that the chest points forward, eyes are forward, and all you're gonna do is bend. Back up. All the way forward. Chest is forward. Get about 10 to 15 reps. Feel good. Go all the way down. The knee doesn't go in front of your sneaker.
Yep.
And come back up. I'll let you try it. Woo. I know it's a challenge.
This looks tough.
It is a tough one. But what is tough will make you stronger sometimes. So take a nice step forward. There you go. Hold my hand for a second. There you go. 3, 2, and 1. Keep it up. Now go. Perfect. If you're having difficulty, you can use a broomstick just to kind of give you some balance. But you're still going to work that quad. Get the other side.
Switch?
Yep.
Okay.
Set that timer for about 45 seconds or 30 seconds on each side. Isolate. If you're having problems with balance, use that broomstick, any little pole, or another chair to give you some balance.
Yeah.
All right, 3, 2, and 1. Good job. So you worked your triceps, you've isolated your quads, right?
Right.
Now we're gonna work the chest, okay? So we're gonna hold right here, the sides of the chair, nice and firm, and come all the way down. All right, once you get up to the top, you're squeezing your triceps, but you're working the chest as well, okay?
Right.
So try for about 3 reps. Keep the body nice and firm. 1, make sure you're breathing. There you go, come on, give me one more. All the way down, and push, good job. There you go, so set your timer.
And if that's too hard, you can do it on the top of the chair.
But it's all about the challenge, right?
Yes.
It is nothing better than challenging yourself in order to make a change. If you want to do the same thing over and over again, you're going to get the same results, right?
Yep.
So challenge yourself here. So you got your dips, you got your isolated lunges, you got your push-up press. Set your timer 15 minutes, all right? Do as much as you can for 30 seconds each exercise and keep on repeating it. Hydrate, keep on going. You got 15 minutes. You may need to take a shower afterwards, but you'll be fine. All right, let's stretch it out.
Okay.
Okay, so you've worked the upper body. Let's work these triceps. I'm gonna turn my back and show you a great way to stretch out the triceps right here. Reach for the middle of your back, all right? Stretch the tricep by putting your hand right here. Stretch, touch the middle of your back. Stretch it out, okay? That's one exercise to get the triceps, all right?
Mm.
Another one to get for the quads is to go into a really deep squat, all right? So right here, take your elbow, put it right in the inside of your thigh and push apart, get a good stretch. In 3, 2, and 1, come nice and slow. Open and close the chest, you worked it. Good way is to open up the chest cavity, contract. Open it up in 3, 2, and 1, and you're done.
Thanks, Sean. You just turned our inactivity into activity.
It's activity.
Yeah.
In the chair.
That's great.
Good job.
The battle of the bulge happens for many of us as we try to shed extra pounds. One way to win is to adopt a total vegetarian or vegan diet. A recent Adventist health study found that the more closely a person consumed a total vegetarian diet, the closer they were to their ideal weight. So each step you take towards a total vegetarian diet will give you an advantage in the battle. A total vegetarian diet is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time for your questions. Linda asks, what are the nutritional benefits of raw as opposed to cooked peppers, carrots, and cabbage? Great question. You know, peppers or capsicums have high levels of vitamin C, and that's a vitamin that is destroyed with cooking. So maybe they're best eaten raw. But cooking can increase fiber and digestibility of veggies too. So for example, cooking carrots increases the amount of available vitamin A, you know, those antioxidants like beta carotene and lutein. And most of the minerals also become more available, like calcium or iron becomes more available when you're cooking your greens. But polyphenols are destroyed by cooking, so we need to eat a variety of raw and cooked. The cabbage, same story, cooking decreases the phytochemical sulforaphane, but it increases the indole phytochemical. By the way, for those of you that might have thyroid disease, cooking will break down the sort of antagonist to your thyroid, so it's best to eat them cooked. So again, either or, whatever makes you eat more of them is what's good, regardless of what the outcome is. So a mixture, basically. Next question, someone called, what might cause chronic boils under the arms, in the groin, or on the back of the neck? Can dietary change help? You know, this condition, if you want to look it up, it's called, big word, hidradenitis suppurativa. That's HID, hidradenitis, and it affects 1 to 4% of the population, many of whom is thought are reacting to yeast or to dairy, or both. Processed foods like flour and sugar can also contribute, looking at some of the studies. So get rid of every little scrap of yeast that's in your diet, the brewer's yeast, the baker's yeast, the nutritional yeast, all out. Don't eat any bakery goods like pizza, that has yeast in too. Bread, cake, they can have yeast. No vinegar, no black tea, no soy sauce, alcohol, mushrooms, all of these are in the same class. And then for the dairy, of course, no milk, cheese, yogurt, or ice cream. Instead, you're going to eat fruit, whole grains, legumes, veggies, nuts, seeds. There's lots more still to eat. But also, avoid traumatizing the skin with tight clothes or activities that cause chafing. And instead, wear light, loose clothing that can absorb the sweat well. Shower every day. Wash those areas very gently with your hands rather than with a washcloth or anything that might chafe or rub. And avoid sticking plasters. They can tear the skin as well. If you smoke, you must stop smoking in order to clear it up. Excess weight has been linked, so do all you can to get your weight down to normal. And if you have a low vitamin D3 level, vitamin D, then start taking 50,000 units a day for 10 days, then 1 to 2,000 units a day. That's going to give improvement according to the studies that are out there. Mary asks, what do you suggest for macular degeneration? Macular degeneration is the most common cause of blindness in the eyes. It's where you lose your eyesight and your central vision. Smoking is known to accelerate this condition. You need to exercise regularly, maintain a normal weight, eat a healthy diet. These have all been proven to help prevent and help with macular degeneration. You need to eat plenty of fruit, especially berries, veggies, nuts and seeds, especially walnuts, chia and flax seeds. They contain nutrients that really help the macula. And you may also choose to supplement. It's one of these few conditions where doctors really believe in supplementing. Vitamin C, vitamin E, B complexes, and then antioxidants. You can actually supplement these, specifically lutein and zeaxanthin, and then minerals like zinc and copper. Remember, if you have a question, you can send them by text, Facebook, email, or phone. Remember to like us. If you're not already on our Facebook page, become part of the Go Healthy for Good community. Now, let's see what's down at the store today. Lemons are the most commonly used citrus. They're native to Asia, but they've migrated all over the world. We use their juice and their zest more than we use their pulp, so look for smooth, brightly coloured skin. And if the fruit feels heavy for its size, then it should be nice and juicy. The juice is useful to preserve foods that oxidise and discolour quickly, like apples, bananas, or avocados. Once squeezed, there's a quick loss of vitamin C, so be sure to drink your lemonade right away. Recent animal research suggests that citrus have anti-cancer properties. Also, if you want to alkalinize your body in the mornings, then squeeze fresh lemon juice into your morning water. But be careful, it will erode the enamel on your teeth. So you better use a straw. Bon appetit. Now back to more from Dr. Wes Youngberg of Youngberg Clinic. I asked him to share a case study.
One of the first patients I saw was a couple that came from Houston, Texas, to a four-day intensive I did at Coronado Island Marriott Resort, which is just a neat place near San Diego to just work with patients. And by just talking to the husband, He was very conversant, Texas boy, big cowboy hat and boots and good guy. But he had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's 3 years ago. And he had been a government environmental toxicology cleanup specialist, the Superfund cleanup projects. He had personally supervised the removal of 250 tons of mercury from some communities. He had, even though he'd worn all the protective equipment and clothes, he would come home regularly at night smelling of benzene on his skin, exposed to just tons of pesticides. And just because you're wearing the right clothes, you can still inhale all kinds of stuff. And Dr. Bredesen actually talks about inhalational Alzheimer's. The things that we breathe in have a huge impact on the brain and can promote that inflammation and toxicity that can lead to cognition problems over time. So he had lost his ability to do many things. So dementia is generally defined as a loss of function in the activities of regular life. And that's really the best functional definition because, you can have memory problems. You could even have short memory problems. But ultimately, can you take care of yourself? Can you take a shower? Can you eat by yourself? Can you use the microwave? Can you be in the house without burning it down? Things like that. And he had lost his ability to do that. Wow. He could not be with his wife at a store without getting lost unless he was right there like a five-year-old. She had to keep her eye on him at all times or he'd get lost and confused and not know where he was.
Wow.
And so the good wife that she was, she brought him to San Diego. And we did all the tests. We took 40 vials of blood. This is a very comprehensive program where we test for a lot of things and figure out where all the problems. And we found lots of problems, which was good news. Yeah. Because if he tested great on everything, then we were like, well, what do we do now? But the more problem areas that you find, the more you have to fix, the greater the chance that those neurons can start healing and those synapses can start working again and those memories coming back. So, long story short, within 1 week of starting the entire program, he's at a Lowe's, large store, and he says to his wife, honey, I need to use the restroom. So she just stopped and let him go and kind of watched him because he had not been able to do that for 3 years without getting lost. And he walked all the way to the back of the store where the restrooms were and used the facilities and then came back through all the aisles and found her. And he literally hadn't been able to do that in 3 years. Mm-hmm. And she actually emailed me that night. I was like, I can't believe it. So it's orientation to time and place is a key factor in Alzheimer's. Within a month, he was now able to do other things like exercise. He had been unable, he was not coordinated enough to exercise and do an aerobic workout with his wife. So now he's able to do reverse lunges. He was getting coordinated. The brain was starting to work with the muscles again. And so all kinds of activities like this. Within 3 months, he was able to cook because he had really enjoyed cooking for family. But every time he had done that for the past 3 years, he had burned things, he'd gotten confused and frustrated, and it was just a disaster. And his wife told me, says, I just watched him do the whole thing. I didn't help him once. He did it all. He was able to, just last week, he was able to mow his in-law's 6-acre lot with a riding lawnmower. He would never even try to do that before. At a walk for Alzheimer's in Houston, Texas. An interviewer came up, a TV station came up to him and wanted to interview him. And normally he would get all flustered and confused and wouldn't be able to, have regular sentence structure. And he was able to talk to them and tell them how hopeful he was and I'm going to get better and I'm still getting better. And so it's just really neat to see him. And he, even after all that improvement, only has a MoCA score, the Montreal Cognitive Assessment score, of 6 out of 30. So he still has very advanced Alzheimer's. But what's different is that his functionality in daily living has completely changed. He could not even use a microwave 3 months ago. For the past 3 years, he was even with instructions, he'd look at it and he couldn't figure it out. His brain wouldn't allow him to figure it out. Now, even without instructions, he can take his food for lunch, live at home alone, and basically use a microwave. And he's so pleased that he's now functional and he can do things that otherwise before he couldn't do it all.
I bet his wife is more than happy. There's another story from Dr. Youngberg straight ahead. You don't want to miss it. Barbara was bedridden from the severe symptoms of MS for a number of years until she heard about the Swank diet. Having been brought up on a lot of meat and grease, it was a huge adjustment to eliminate saturated fats from her diet, but she wanted her life back. She tells us what transpired. Check this out.
I'm fully active and mobile due to the Swank diet. I can walk for distances when I feel on a great day. I can walk. There have been times when my husband and I have, gone to the grocery store and I might walk a couple of miles even at the grocery store. So that's really encouraging. And we have a Swank Pinterest page and we have over 6,000 recipes that are Swank friendly, as we say, that you can go to and that you can use. Everything is available now. I can make my own pizza. I don't have to use cheese. I'm fine now with a wonderful crust and just lots of veggies and I don't even miss the cheese. Now, there are many that still have their cheese, MS people that I know, but they have the fat-free available on their pizza. It's so great for them. It's wonderful. And on this Facebook page, there are over 2,500 members, and you have to either have MS or be an MS caregiver to be a part of this particular group. And again, we are centered in the Swank diet and how we can use the Swank diet to help us with our symptoms and try and halt some of the progression. God really knows what's going on in your life. He's not asleep. And he wants you to come to him with your needs and with your crying out. It was the only one that really understood was the Lord. Jesus was the only one who really knew what it was like to be isolated, truly alone. And I was having just a tiny, tiny, this infinitesimal taste of what it was like for him. And so spiritually, there was privilege in that. I began to see the limitation, not so much as a limitation, but as a gateway. It wasn't something that was going to completely hold me back with everything. There was this one little haven right here of my life that I could go to that he would always help me to be centered and help me through it. If I were to speak with somebody who has MS, if somebody were to ask me, what would you say to someone who has MS? The first thing that I would say is, you are not alone. There are many others who have MS who understand you. There are resources available now where you can go to find others who can help you.
There surely are. Now another case study from Wes Youngberg, lifestyle medicine specialist.
I had a lady that called me from Tennessee and said, my mother-in-law has lost her ability to have good short-term memory. She's very concerned about it. She's very functional every other way. And she's seen a neurologist, and the neurologist is explaining she's right there on the border between mild cognitive impairment and Alzheimer's. And so they decided that they wanted to do the whole program. So they were troopers. I figured out how to get all the labs done there in Tennessee. I was just working with them by three-way phone call. And so she tested on the Montreal Cognitive Assessment at 21. So that's basically significant mild cognitive impairment. But she would constantly say, I keep forgetting things. My short-term memory is really bad. Well, she understood where this was going to go because she's a caregiver for a lady who has Alzheimer's.
Oh my.
And so even though she recognizes that she's concerned about her short-term memory, The real issue is preventing that progressive decline into significant advanced forms where they have to have something do everything for them. Feed them, take them to the restroom, clean them up, bathe them, sleep right next to them so that if they wake up and start walking around or wandering, they're being taken care of. And so it literally takes 24/7 care and changes in personality. So we absolutely want to stop that. So that's the key. It's not, reversal is great, but prevention of progression is really the most important strategy. So she wanted to at least do that. And so I've been working with them for about 4 months. And every time I talk to her on the phone, I says, how you doing? She says, well, still got short-term memory loss. So she doesn't know she's better. But that very week, this is just last week, we had retested her MoCA, and it had gone from 21 to 26 out of 30. Technically, at the low end of the normal range. Now, it's normal, so because she is now able to recall things 10 minutes later that normally she wasn't able to recall. But in her mind, she's still forgetting things maybe from the past day or week. And so she's getting better. She just doesn't realize it when you ask her. But her daughter and all her relatives and friends are keep telling her, says, you're doing so much better. I can tell she's doing better too. So just because somebody thinks they're not doing better doesn't mean they're not doing better. So but here's the key in this story. What we learned in her case, what we found from the testing, is that she had a HLA, a human leukocyte antigen test, blood test, that coded for, it's that called a haplotype or a proteogenomic exam, that tells us that she's super sensitive or susceptible to mold biotoxins. So then we actually had them test their house for the genetic fingerprint of mold biotoxins. It's called an ERMI kit that can be ordered online. And so they dusted the house to see if there was biotoxin residue, that genetic fingerprint. Sure enough, it's supposed to be less than a 2, index of 2. Theirs was 13.5. Mm. They had a horrible mold problem in the house there in Tennessee. Didn't run an air conditioner, didn't use a humidifier, and so mold was just naturally going to grow. And once they started looking for it, you could actually see it behind furniture, on the back of furniture. It was growing because of the moist environment in the house. And so we had to basically kick her out of the house, and they had to remediate, do mold remediation, which is a horrible hassle, but my experience is that patients who have a mold problem in the house or at work who do not address that, especially if they have a lab-proven sensitivity to mold, they're not going to get better from their dementia until that problem is fixed. So it's really critical to look at the step back and not just assume it's purely a dietary issue. Even diet is critical and a game changer. If you don't change your diet, you're probably not going to get better either.
So but she would need to change.
You have to address the actual causes, plural.
Right. So you still had her do dietary change.
Well, absolutely. So there's an algorithm that we use to come up with what's called the RECODE report, which is a 14-page personalized health risk assessment on what are your risk factors and what is causing synaptic memory loss. And it has an index of a continuum in the 5 major categories that drive Alzheimer's or dementia. Of course, inflammation we talked about, glycotoxicity or high sugars or low sugars we talked about, hormonal imbalances we talked about, vascular problems typical with cardiac risk factors, and trauma. Okay, so all those can drive it. So we need, or toxins, biotoxins. If we don't figure out where the triggers are, probably not going to help that patient get better.
Just give us 2 other lifestyle factors that could just make a difference.
Okay, number 1 is sleep. If somebody is not sleeping 7 to 8 hours a night, good deep sleep, there's going to be cognitive problems. That has to be fixed. It's easier said than done. I get that. But in other words, we have to work extra hard at fixing sleep because the brain can only defrag or detoxify during deep sleep at night. It's the only time it can get rid of toxins. And so that's very critical. Number two is daily exercise. Every time that we exercise, the cells of the brain release a brain-derived neurotrophic factor. It's a hormone-like substance, an elixir that literally heals the fragmented neurons of the brain and restore them to more optimal function and reconnect those synapses. So every time you exercise, think, my brain's getting sharper and smarter.
So don't leave it too long before you exercise again. And stay away from the sugary foods, the trans fats, the highly processed foods that clog the body and the brain. The brain is put at risk in three major ways: by inflammation and exercise, deficiencies in nutrients and hormones, and by toxic exposures. So be aware of your intake and environment. Exercise regularly and give your brain time to detoxify by getting 7 to 9 hours of good quality sleep every night. That's all from me today. Thanks for joining us and go healthy for good. I'll see you next time.